So what I decided, well, the decisions that I made went through a number of processes. I don't even know yet what's going to happen. But I thought that we've never done it before. Maybe we should learn a little bit of Megillat Eicha. We always dedicate time to Megillat Rut and Megillat Esther. A little bit Megillat Eicha, so that we should be in some way familiar with it when Tisha B'Av is going to arrive. All right. But in order to introduce the topic in general, I may be going over a little bit of territory that I covered a few years ago, but there's a great deal that was added to it. It was a study that started as a result of an incident that I, one of these things that I sort of found myself in, which I'll explain in the coming few minutes. A statement was made. Yitzhak Rabin, Zichrono Livracha. The zealots destroyed the Second Temple. Or, maybe to be more precise, may have been the zealots destroyed the temple. And of course this was said to me by a number of people because I was at the time being accused of being a zealot, a destroyer of the temple. Since then, of course, I've calmed down quite a bit, and I've become as soft as a tea, as harmless, as very harmless. Why was the temple destroyed? Why was the temple destroyed? Of course, this is something that's going to be dealt with in Eicha, but there are all sorts of sources, and I want to take you through the sources in Mishnah, the sources in Talmud, and then the sources of later generations. Why did it all happen? We're talking about the most tragic period in Jewish history, and a period that has been tragic in Jewish history throughout Jewish history. Shivasa v'tamuz to Tisha B'Av. So first, we will begin with the Mishnah. The Mishnah at the end of Masechet Ta'anit says the following. Chamisha dvarim iru et avoteinu b'shiva asar b'tamuz. There are five things that happened to our fathers on the 17th day of Tammuz. The chamisha b'tisha b'av, and there are five that occurred on Tisha B'Av. And the Mishnah goes on to list them. B'shiva asar b'tamuz, on the 17th day of Tammuz, nishtabru haluchot. The luchot were broken. Nishtabru haluchot. Remember, I never noticed this before. I don't know if I'm reading too much into it. Some of you may recall a shiur that I gave much earlier this year. Did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchot, or did they fall from him and were broken? There were two approaches. It's not one of these questions that there's one answer. The Mefarshim disagree on whether Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchot. He came down from the mountain on the 17th day of Tammuz. God told him that the Jewish people have made a golden calf. He comes down to the camp and he sees them dancing around the Egel, and it seems that he breaks the Luchot. But there was a difference of opinion. You may recall it was a shiur that was a takeoff on that which was written by Nechama Leibowitz. And I took the position that it may very well be that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't break the Luchot, but that the Luchot became very heavy for him and he was no longer able to hold them. I'm not going to go into that shiur. That was, by the way, a very good year. And she knew already what I was going to say. It was a very good year. It's just now that I've learned this Mishnah. I learned it a few days ago. But the Mishnah says on Shivasa Batamuz, Nishtabru Haluchot. What does Nishtabru mean? They were broken. It does not mean, it doesn't say on the 17th day of Moshe broke them. That's right. It grammatically, we're talking about something that happened, not something that was done. Just right, I just didn't notice it until now. May also be a proof to the position that I showed was a position that was taken by the Rashbam, the Malbim, elaborated on by Rav Soloveitchik, a position taken yet by his great grandfather, the first Joseph Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. Anyway, this was just an aside. Five things happened on Shavuos HaBetamuz. One, the Luchot were broken. Ubatel HaTamid. They stopped bringing the daily sacrifice. The city was already in siege to such an extent that they were no longer able to bring the carbon tamid. And it may also have been, Rashi says, it was a decree, most probably a decree of Rome. I believe that the Mishnah is talking about the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. V'hufkaha ahir, and the city was broken into, the walls of the city were breached. This certainly was on certainly is talking about the second Beit HaMikdash, because the first Beit HaMikdash, the city was broken into on the ninth day of Tammuz. It's the second Beit HaMikdash that the 17th day of Tammuz they broke through the walls of the city. The Sorav Apustimus et HaTorah Apustimus, a Roman governor, burned the Sefer Torah. Behemid Selem Behechel, and they placed an idolatrous statue into the Beit HaMikdash itself. And then there were five things that happened on Tisha B'Av. The Tisha B'Av Nigzar Al Avoteinu Shelo Yikamsul Aretz. On Tisha B'Av there was a decree upon our fathers that they should not enter Eretz Yisrael. That was the night of weeping and crying, when the Meraglim returned with the report that we can't go into the land. From that time on and further, Tisha B'Av, of course, became a day of tragedy throughout all of history. And it began with the decree upon our fathers that they should not enter Eretz Yisrael. V'chorav habayid barishona ubashnia. The first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed on the ninth of Av, and so was the second. And obviously the position that is taken by our rabbis and Jewish thought in general is, it wasn't just a coincidence. Isn't that interesting? The second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed on the same day as the first. What a coincidence. This was not coincidence. It's not coincidence. It means, yes, there are times of anger, a divine form of anger. And Tisha B'Av is one of those days. The Nilket of Beitar, the city of Beitar was captured. The city of Beitar was really the capture of the city of Beitar was ultimately the Romans crushing the Bar Kokhba rebellion, which took place 65 years after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. This was Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Akiva who had rebelled against Rome. This was the last hope, and not only the last hope, but they had even established a Jewish commonwealth and independence, and Yerushalayim was the capital. It was it was something that lasted for no more than 3 years, and then the Roman legions crushed Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kokhba at the Battle of Beitar. Some 500,000 people died in that battle. So that was also not mere coincidence that it happened on Tisha B'Av. And finally,
It says V'nechlesh ha'ir, the Romans at one point plowed under the city of Yerushalayim. They simply, whatever was used as bulldozers in those days, they brought up onto Har HaMoriah, and they simply wanted to remove any recognizing marks, any traces that this is the holy place of the Jewish people. Those are the five things that happened on Tisha B'Av. Of course, we know that throughout history there are other things that happened on Tisha B'Av, the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492 was on Tisha B'Av. The First World War began on Tisha B'Av, and the fact is that the First World War was really only only that which led to the Second World War. There's no question about it. They are all interrelated, so that the great tragedies of this generation, of this century, all began on Tisha B'Av. All right, that's the step one in the historical background. Step number two. Why? Why did it happen? That's the... why did it happen? Is it true that the temple was destroyed by the zealots? Sorry. What is the Gemara that is known to everybody? It's the Gemara in Masechta Yuma, Daf Tet Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says, why was the first Bet HaMikdash destroyed? Says the Gemara, because Jews transgressed the three cardinal sins: Avodah Zorah, idolatry, Gilui Arayot, adultery, and Shfichas Damim, murder. We're talking about Jews who had committed the three cardinal sins. The extent to which they committed these sins, difficult to know, but this is what the Gemara says. The Gemara goes on to say, Ubayit Sheni, and the second Beit HaMikdash Mifnei Ma'achorev, why was the second Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Everybody knows the answer to this. Mifnei Sinat Chinam, because of hatred between Jew and fellow Jew. Hatred for no good reason. Sinat Chinam. Then the Gemara asks, which was worse, the three cardinal sins or sinat chinam? Says the Gemara, tnu einechem babira, take a look at the Beit HaMikdash. It was returned to the first, but not returned to the second. In other words, those, a Jewish community that had committed the three cardinal sins, 70 years later already the foundations of the Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, were already being prepared, and they were building the second Beit HaMikdash. But since the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, it's now some 1,958 years or something of that sort since the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and we don't have it yet, which means that Sinat Chinam is worse. Sinat Chinam is something that simply eats away at the body of Klal Yisrael. All right. So everybody knows that. Everybody knows about Sinat Chinam. You'll ask anybody, they'll tell you the destruction came because of Sinat Chinam. Next. Number of other sources that are required. I'm going to learn with you a Gemara in the Sechet Shabbat Kuf Yud Tet Amud Bet. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, small Gemara. Amar Abaya. Abaya says, Lo Chorva Yerushalayim Ela Bishvil Shechilulu Ba'at HaShabbat. Yerushalayim was destroyed because Jews desecrated the Shabbat. Shenemar Pasuk in Yecheskel, Umi Shabtotai He'elimu Eineihem,
from my Shabbat, they turned away their eyes. Va'achel betocham, and it was desecrated in their midst. Omar Rabavu, Rabavu says, and I suggest that you begin to count. Abaye is the one who said that Yerushalayim was destroyed because of Chil Shabbat. Omar Rabbi Avu says, Lo chorvo Yerushalayim ele bishvil shebitlu kriyat shema shacharit v'arvit. Rabbi Avu says that Yerushalayim was destroyed because Jews did not fulfill the mitzvah of reading Shema in the morning and in the evening. Shenema, as it says, Hoy mashkimei baboke, woe, those who get up in the morning, sheichor yirdofu, they pursue the alcoholic beverages. Meloift, they don't say Shema. V'hoya, there's another pasuk, both of them in Yeshayahu, Kinor v'nevel tov v'chalil v'yayin mishtehem. Ah, they're having parties and they're playing all sorts of instruments. Bet Paul Hashem lo yabitu, but they don't look at what God has wrought. They're trying to live, eat, live, and be merry today because this is it. That's what life is all about. Uksiv, and it says afterwards, Yeshayahu says, Lachem golo ami miblidat, therefore my people went into exile without knowing because they did not have the knowledge of God. They didn't look at God. They didn't feel Him, and they didn't sense Him. Gemara goes on to say, Amar Rav Hamnuna, I believe this is opinion number 3. Rav Hamnuna says, Lo chorvo Yerushalayim, ela bishvil shebitlu bat tinokot shel Beit Rabban. Yerushalayim was destroyed because school children were interrupted in the course of their study of Torah. There wasn't enough study of Torah of school children. Shenema, Shefocha Pasek in Yirmiyot, Shefocha Olol Vachutz. Children were cast out, and they didn't study. Matam Shefoch, why were Jews cast out? Mishum to Olol Vachutz, because children were just running around in the streets and weren't learning Torah as they should. Amarula, fourth opinion. Lo chorva Yerushalayim, elem tnei shalo hoya lehem boshet panim zemizeh. Yerushalayim was destroyed because Jews didn't have shame from one another. I imagine it was one of those periods of let it all hang out, not embarrassed or ashamed of anything. If you like it, do it. No shame. A community requires a sense of shame. Where there is no shame, a lot of things happen. The Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Chovas Halvavas, says if not for shame, people wouldn't give tzedakah, wouldn't have a guest in their home. If we would not have shame, there are a lot of good deeds that we wouldn't do. Shame is a very powerful force. A very powerful positive force. So therefore, Rav Chanina says, Lo chorvo, who was that? That was Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna, who's Ula, Lo chorvo Yerushalayim was destroyed because they didn't have shame from one another. I'm Rav Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak says, Lo chorvo Yerushalayim ela bishvil shehushvu katon v'katon. Yerushalayim was destroyed because the differences between small and big were erased. In other words, the young did not respect their elders. Everybody's the same. Everybody has an opinion, and everybody's opinion has to be listened to. It was, you know, it had become an egalitarian society. Everybody is equal. Now Torah and any kind of a functioning society depends on, yes, there are hierarchies. There are the elders and there are the younger. Hushvu v'katon v'gadol, all the same. V'hoya, as it says, the pasuk says, in Yeshayahu, v'hoyu ka'om ka'koin, the people were just like the Kohen.
and everybody has an opinion, and everybody has something to say, and everybody feels that they are important, and everybody needs a position, prominence, power. Everybody!
Omar of Amram, Bereid Rav Shimon Bar Abba, Omar of Shimon Bar Abba, Omar of Hanina, Lo Chorva Yerushalayim Elo Bishvil Shalom Hochichu Zedzeh, Yerushalayim was destroyed because they did not admonish one another. There are times at which people have to get up and say what the truth is. By the way, I want you to notice, I think we're up to number 6 or 7. I've lost track already. Each one seems to be saying, Lo Chorva Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim was destroyed only because of this. In other words, everybody seems to see a specific reason for the destruction of Yerushalayim that in great measure rules out all of the others. What it really means is that they tried coming to grips with the profound tragedy, and these are people who are living a few hundred years later, and they can't really come up with an answer. Anybody who thinks that they can come up with an answer that is the answer for tragedy is making a mistake.
Chorva Yerushalayim only because of this.
So we just said the opinion that the Yerushalayim was destroyed only because Jews did not admonish one another. There are times at which you can't remain silent. You have to say what has to be said. Can't let things just roll off your back. There are times at which people have to go out and admonish, if they know how to admonish, and that they are personally clean themselves. Further it says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda says, Lo Chorva Yerushalayim Ela Bishvil Shebizu Bo Talmidei Chachamim. Yerushalayim was destroyed because they embarrassed Talmidei Chachamim in the streets of Yerushalayim. Talmud Chacham, Rav, Rabbi, teacher, nothing with nothing. Their opinions mean nothing. They are nothing. Shebizu Bo Talmidei Chachamim.
Shenema, Vayihiyu Malivim B'Malacheihu Elokim. They shamed and they embarrassed the messengers of God. Ubozim Devarav, and through that they cast great shame upon his words. Umitatim B'Nevi'av, and they mocked his prophets. Adalot Chamat Hashem B'Amo, until God's anger came up against his people. Ad Ein Marpeh, until there was no way anymore to heal it. It had reached the point where the scholar, the Talmud Chacham, the prophet, was simply no longer of any importance.
Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, this is just a parenthetic comment that the Gemara says. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Kol Amavaza Talmud Chacham Ein Lo Refuah L'Makato. Anybody who shames Talmidei Chachamim, there is no medicine. There is no way to heal his illness. How can you heal somebody? If somebody has a little derech eretz for a good yid, so he's going to listen to a good yid. But what happens if he's not going to listen to a good Jew? So how is he ever going to heal his weakness? Further, I believe there's one. There is another opinion in the Gemara. Omar Rava. Rava says, Lo Chorva Yerushalayim Ela Bishvil Shepasku Mimeno Anshe Amana. Rava says Yerushalayim was destroyed because there were no longer any people you can trust. People of trust. You know, so much of our daily lives depends on a sense of trust. We trust that certain people will be doing exactly what they have to do. The bus driver is going to come with the bus. We assume that that's going to happen. You pick up the phone, you're going to get a dial tone. You know, can't always be sure, but it's a lot better. And there are things that we take on trust all of the time.
Pasku anshe emona shenema. A pasuk in Yirmiyahu, show to do bechutzak Yerushalayim, go looking through the streets of Yerushalayim, uru'u no udu'u, take a look, take a look through the streets back, you see Bidakovotel in her streets, Imtimtu Ish Osen Mishpat Mevakesh Emuna. If you find a man that's doing justice and seeks trustworthiness, and then I'll forgive them. There is another opinion that says that even at the worst times in Yerushalayim's history, Lo Poskom Imenu Anshei Emuna, there's somebody who disagrees with Rav and says there were always people you could trust. All right? How many were there? There were eight. Correct. There were eight. Lo Chorba Yerushalayim, because of these eight reasons. It's not a word about Sinas Chinam. Not a word about Sinas Chinam. Going to go one step further. There is a Gemara in Masechta Bava Metzia that you can add to the list of eight, where the Gemara says Yerushalayim was destroyed because Ha'amidu Dinehem Al Din Torah. When there was a question, a dispute between people, I want to know the halacha. I want to know the din. And they did not go lifnim mishurat hadin. They simply, you know, I want down to the last agura. I want, and I want din. And a world can't really exist on din law, the strict letter of the law alone. Torah calls upon Jews to be ready. There are times that you have to go lifnim mishurat hadin, beyond the requirements of din. By the way, you may not have noticed, but I want you to notice, not once have we heard that the Yerushalayim was destroyed because of the zealots, Gemara Yuma, Gemara Shabbos, Gemara Bava Metzia, no zealots to be seen at all. What was upsetting to me, of course, was the fact that history was being perverted and used as a weapon. The zealots destroyed the temple, and anybody who disagrees with the government's policy is therefore a zealot, and if he's a zealot, he's a destroyer of the temple. And I was told that by three people that evening. Do you know the zealots destroyed the temple? Everybody, all right, I'm not going to use the various accents of the people who accused me. You know exactly where they're from, and you maybe even figure out who they were. All right. The zealots. All right. So far, no sound of no zealot has appeared on the scene yet. Now we're going to go to a further stage. I'm going to give you four additional opinions. And ultimately, of course, we're going to have to explain it all. And I believe that it's very confusing to many people, and I think that we have the way and the means to understand exactly what the Gemara's, all of these Gemara's are talking. There is the opinion of the Ramban. I had once mentioned this Ramban, but I found where the Ramban elaborates on it even more. The Ramban says the following in Parsha Vayishlach. Parsha Vayishlach describes the meeting between Yaakov and Esav, two brothers, after a separation of 22 years, are coming toward one another, and both of them have their families and their camps on Konanut, preparation for battle, on a war footing. So it says, Valtatin, the Ramban says the following. Yaakov sends messages to Esav, sends gifts, Kovamar Avdecha Yaakov, so says his servant Yaakov. Says the Ramban, Altati Gamze Yirmos, this also is an indication, Ki Anachnu Hitchalnu Nefilatenu Biyad Edom. Says this is an indication or a hint to us that we began our fall into the hands of Edom, that's Rome, we're guilty of it. Ki malchei bayit sheni, because the kings of the second temple, ba'u bibrit im haromiyim, they made a covenant with the Romans. Umehem shebol de Roma, and those, there were those who went to Rome. Vihi haitas simpat nefilatam biadam. Ultimately, the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash came because we had entered into an agreement and a treaty with Rome, and Romans came to Eretz Yisrael, and Jews went to Rome. V'zeh muskar b'divrei rabotenu u'meforsom b'sforim. This is mentioned in the words of our rabbis, and it's clearly known from all the history books. Wait a minute. What's the Ramban talking about? The Ramban doesn't know the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. 8 reasons why Yerushalayim was destroyed. He doesn't know about Sinat Chinam. The Ramban comes along over here, and he sounds like some kind of a political commentator, and he says that the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because Jews entered into an agreement with Rome. Now he says it not only in Parashat Vayishlach this morning, I found that he says it also in Parashat B'chukotam. In his explanation of the Tochacha, the Ramban's approach, and this is of course for a separate shir of its own, the Ramban's approach is the following. There is a Tochacha in Parashat B'chukotai, there's a Tochacha in Parashat Itavo. So he says the Tochacha of Parashat B'chukotai is talking about the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. And the Tochacha in Parashat Itavo is talking about the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. And he proves it from so many psukim. I mean, there's no doubt about it, that the Ramban is able to prove clearly that the Parashat B'chukotai is talking about the first Beit HaMikdash, Parashat Kitavo is talking about the second. When he talks about the second Beit HaMikdash, he says the following. He brings different psukim in the second Tochacha in Kitavo, where it says that Jews are going to be taken off into exile, their sons and their daughters will be led out into slavery. The enemy is going to rule over us. So he says, all of that is talking about the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Ki holach Agrippas hamelach besov bayit sheni. Agrippas was a king. He was a king not really of Jewish extraction, but he was king. And Agrippas HaMelech, at the end of the period of the second Beit HaMikdash, he went to Rome, and he entered into a relationship with Rome. Ba'al halichato sham, because he went there. And really it meant that the Jewish government entered into a relationship with the Roman government. Necharav habayit. Destroyed. What does the Ramban do with all of the other opinions? We'll get back to the Rambam. Second, the Rambam. There is a famous letter of the Rambam. His famous letter to the wise men of Marseille. And the letter in and of itself is an unbelievably powerful document. The question that the wise men of France had sent to the Rambam is they wanted to know what was his opinion about astrology. And on a lot of the stuff that you may see in the papers, they listed for him all sorts of things. People who are born at a certain on a certain date, such and such will happen, born in the morning, born in the afternoon. And they go through all of the wisdom with a small W of astrology. And they ask the Rambam, is there anything to all of it? So of course the Rambam makes that great statement that he has read everything in the world extant on the on astrology. I always say I don't understand. The man came home, he spent the whole day in the Sultan's palace in Cairo. He came home at night, he writes in one of his letters that he comes home at night at 11 o'clock. When he comes home at night at 11 o'clock, his waiting room is full of people who want to see him medically, you know, either on the Kupa or you know, Prati, but they're usually for free. And he excuses himself for a moment and he says, just let me take a little bit, something to eat. He'd go and have something to eat, and then he'd have people come in to see him till about 1 o'clock
in the morning. And then he says he'd start to learn. You tell me when he had time to read all of the literature about astrology, and if the Rambam says in a letter that he read it all, you can bet that he read it all. And of course the position that he takes is that it's nonsense, it's absolute nonsense, forget about it, and then he makes the following statement. Vizuhi, it's the involvement with this nonsense, she'ibdo malchuteinu, that destroyed our kingdom, ve'hecherivo hecholeinu, and it caused the destruction of our Beit HaMikdash, ve'higatanu avalom, and we have reached this terrible low period in our history, she'avoteinu chatu ve'inam, our fathers sinned, and they're no longer, l'fi shemotzu sporim rabim be'elu hadvorim shel divrei hachozim v'kochavim, because they found many books about these things that were written by the seers of the stars. Shedvorim elu, he says, hein ikar avodah zarah, this is really idolatry. Kamo shebi'anu behilchos avodah zarah, as we have explained in the laws of avodah zarah. Tohu, they made the mistake, for no achareim, and they went after all of this. V'din, when they thought, Shehein Chochmot Mefoarot, they thought that astrology is really an exceptional, outstanding kind of wisdom. V'shiyesh behem to'elet gedolah, and that it's a great deal of benefit. And you know what happened as a result? Listen to the word, this sentence of the Rambam. V'lo nit'asku lo b'lemidat milchama. They didn't involve themselves with learning how to wage war. They should have trained themselves to wage war. V'lo b'kibush haratzot. They didn't train themselves to conquer lands. Elodimu shotan hadvarim yo'ilu them. They thought that all of their astrology is going to help them. U'lefichach, therefore, Koru Otam HaNeviim, the prophets called them scholim ve'avilim, fools and people of nonsense. Vadai scholim ayu. Of course they were foolish and they were stupid. V'acharei atou ashelo yo'ilu halachu. They followed that which was nonsense and that which couldn't help. The Rambam says, you know what they should have spent their time and energy in? Instead of looking at the horoscope, what they should have done is created a standing army, learned how to fight, and they should have been ready, if necessary, to conquer lands, and that way they would have remained strong. Wait a minute. What's the Rambam talking about? And what about Sinas Chinam? The Rambam doesn't know the Gemara? Of course he knows. We all know the Gemara of Sinas Chinam. The Rambam doesn't know it. Didn't the Rambam know that the Zealots destroyed the Second Temple? Doesn't he know the eight or nine reasons that the Gemara gives us for the destruction of Yerushalayim? Here the Rambam comes up. He sounds like the Rambam already. He sounds like some kind of a political commentator for Haaretz. He is the military commentator. And the Rambam is telling us they should have had a standing army, they should have learned how to wage war, they should have conquered lands, and instead they got involved in all sorts of nonsense, and therefore, whatever has happened to us, has happened to us. That's why we lost the Commonwealth. Based on the conditions, the story was all over. Third, Gemara Masechet Kitin, the famous Gemara about Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Because of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Says the Gemara the following. You know the story? There was a man whose friend was Kamtza and whose enemy was Bar Kamtza. He made a party, and by mistake his servant, who was supposed to invite Kamtza, invited Bar Kamtza, and Bar Kamtza comes to the party. Most probably Bar Kamtza comes to the party because he assumes that this is some kind of an attempt to let bygones be bygones. And on. All right, so Bar Kamtza comes to the party. The fellow who makes the party takes a look and sees Bar Kamtza is here, and he goes into a fit of anger, and he tells Bar Kamtza, get out of here. And Bar Kamtza is terribly embarrassed. So he says, listen, do me a favor. I'm sitting here ready. I'll pay for whatever I eat. No, I'll pay for half of the whole, the bill of the entire party. No, God. I'll pay for it all. I don't know why he didn't. I can't for the life of me figure out. That really had to be sinas chinam. I tell you, I would have taken a deal like that. Pay for the whole party. And Bar Kamsa, he unceremoniously threw Bar Kamsa out of the house, and Bar Kamsa felt there were rabbis and there were community leaders there, and nobody stood up for him. He's going to show these fellow Jews, and he's going to go to Rome, and he's going to tell Rome that Jews have rebelled. He does that, he goes to Rome, and he tells Caesar that Jews have rebelled, and how can he prove it? So, listen, give me an animal to bring as a sacrifice from Caesar in the Beth HaMikdash, and you'll see that Jews are not going to permit it, they're not going to take it. That's going to be clearly an indication that they have rebelled. I mean, obviously the story has to be understood on so many different levels, but we're not going to go into that. Anyway, he brings the animal back, but on the way he made a slight blemish in it, that according to our law, you're not permitted to bring it on the altar. So here the Chachamim were now faced with a horrible dilemma. And the Gemara says the following. In other words, should they bring the sacrifice on the Mizbeach, or should they not? So the Gemara says, there was a man there by the name of Zechariah ben Avkilus. Says the Gemara the following. First, they thought, listen, let's bring the animal as a sacrifice on the altar. We have no choice. So Zechariah ben Avkilus objected, and he said, you know what? This is a precedent that you're going to set. People are going to say that you can bring an animal with a blemish on the Mizbeach. You can't do that. So they said, listen, let's kill Bar Kamsa so that he can't go back to, an assassination, a chisul job on Bar Kamsa, so he shouldn't be able to go back to Rome. So Zechariah ben Avkilus objected, because he said that people are going to say that a person who makes a blemish in an animal is to be put to death. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, said Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is a few generations later. It was probably about 150 years later. Rabbi Yochanan said, "Am v'netanuto shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkilus." I'm not sure precisely how to translate it. Sort of the humility of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkilus, but I will explain in a moment. The humility of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkilus, hecheriva et beitenu, destroyed our Beit Hamikdash, the sorfat hecholenu, and it caused that our temple should be burned, the Higlitanu Me'artzenu, and it caused us to be exiled from our land. Do you understand? Rabbi Yochanan here is throwing the blame for everything on Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkilus. Didn't he hear about Sinat Chinam? Didn't he hear about the Zealots? Didn't Rabbi Yochanan know the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos? Did he know the Gemara in Bava Metzia? And what does he indeed mean? Because of the humility of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkilus. That word, anvenetanuto, humility, and that's not a good translation of it, is used by the Targum in Torah, in Parashat Shlach. It says that when Moshe sends the Meraglim, he changed Hoshea bin Nun's name. Vayikra Moshe called Hoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. And Rashi says, why did he call him Yehoshua? Because he prayed, Ka Yoshiacha, God should save you, Me'atzat Meraglim, from the council of the Meraglim. Why did he have to pray for Yehoshua? Says the Targum Yonatan, Tadchome, when he saw Anvenetanuto Shel Yehoshua, when he saw the humility of Yehoshua, Moshe became frightened. What does humility mean over here? So I'll explain what it means. What it really means is there's good humility, positive humility, and there's bad humility, there is negative humility. Positive person has to be humble. You can't be full of pride and conceit. Can't. But then there is a humility that can be absolutely destructive. That humility is when a person is incapable of making a decision. When a person is incapable of making a decision, the responsibility of leadership is to decide. What did Rav Zecharia ben Avkilas do over here? Rav Zecharia ben Avkilas said, you want to bring it as a sacrifice upon the altar, people will say that you can bring an animal with a blemish on the altar. Can't do that. The suggestion was made, let's kill Bar Kamsa so Bar Kamsa can't go back and report to Rome that Jews have rebelled against Rome. So Rav Zecharia ben Avkilas said you can't do that, because then people will say that if somebody makes a blemish in a sacrifice, you put him to death. The question should have been asked then, so Rav Zecharia ben Avkilas, what do you suggest? What do you suggest? You have been able to tell us what not to do. But what about what to do? Now, that this is the pshat of Rav Zecharia ben Avkilas, I want to tell you something else. There is a marker. This is a Tosefta in the seventh chapter of Masechet Shabbat. There is a machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about bones and leftovers that are on a table. Is it mukts on Shabbos, not mukts on Shabbos? There's a difference of opinion between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And then the Gemara says, that the Tosefta says, Rav Zecharia ben Avkilas didn't do like Beit Shammai, nor like Beit Hillel. He sort of ate in such a way that there were never bones left on the table. Omer, Rav Yossi, the same statement that Rav Yochanan makes here, on the Netanitosa of Zecharia ben Avkilas, the humility of Zecharia ben Avkilas, lost us our land, the destruction of our Beis HaMikdash, the raising of Yerushalayim, and our exile amongst the nations of the world. What do they want from this poor Zecharia? Rav Zecharia didn't want to get involved in the machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. He wanted to be frumer. So what shall tell about being a little frumer? You know what Rav Yossi is saying? Rav Yossi is saying precisely the same thing that Rav Yochanan is saying. A leader has to take a position. You can't live in this dream world of I'm not here and I'm not there. You have to come down either like Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel. But no Beit Shammai and no Beit Hillel is not making a decision. No, we can't bring the sacrifice on the Mizbeach. No, we can't kill Bar Kamsa. Means that you are removing all options, but you're not telling us what we can do. See what that comes from? That comes from a negative kind of humility. It means not taking the position, not taking the stand. And leadership, you have to know when to take a position, regardless of how dangerous it may be. But that's what leadership is all about. There's somebody who has to be there to take a position. You can't abstain from life. And certainly when one is in a position of leadership in the Jewish community, you certainly can't abstain. You may not be popular for the positions you take. There may very well be negative aspects, but you have to be ready to take it. You have to be ready to take the heat because you've made a decision.
Let me just, for a moment, review. In addition to the Gemaras that we've learned, we've now learned the Rambam. The Rambam says that the destruction and the exile came because we entered into all sorts of agreements with Rome, and Rome got a foothold in Eretz Israel, and that foothold in Eretz Israel ultimately brought the Corbett. The Rambam who says that Jews were foolish. They involved themselves in all sorts of things that just wouldn't help them. What they should have done was raise an army, train men, be ready to conquer. They had to be ready to protect themselves. They had to be ready to fight. Reb Yochanan and Reb Yossi blame it all on one man, Zechariah ben Avkilos. Fourth opinion. The fourth opinion is that of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish was not only at first the student of Reb Yochanan, he was his contemporary, and then he became his equal. Reish Lakish is the one who is famous for the statement, Elaha Saminu Lekupavloi, I swear, I hate you Babylonians. He was speaking to one of the rabbis who had come for a visit from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and he says, I hate you Babylonians, because you didn't come up to Eretz Yisrael, you didn't come on Aliyah in the days of Ezra. Would you have come in the days of Ezra, the Beis HaMikdash would never have been destroyed. Understand, Reish Lakish, 700 years after Ezra, says that the reason why we lost everything that we lost was because 700 years earlier Jews didn't come on Aliyah. So Reish Lakish blames it on Jews not coming on Aliyah 700 years earlier. Reb Yochanan blames it on leadership at the time of the Korban that didn't have the guts or the stamina, the mental stamina, to take a position. The Ramban says we entered into treaties we shouldn't have entered into, and the Ramban says that we involved ourselves in all sorts of things we shouldn't have been involved in, and we should have established an army. What happened with Sinas Chinam? And what's even more important is what happened with the Zealots. I thought that the Zealots destroyed the Second Temple. For that matter, what do all of the Gemaras mean? In my humble opinion, everything that's said over here is everything here that's said is true. Everything is said is true. But what happened were a number of things, and not all of them had to happen. Not all of them had to happen together, or not all of them had to happen. Now, number one, it's possible for a foreign power to conquer Eretz Israel, but conquering Eretz Israel does not necessarily have to mean the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. You know, there are nations that have conquered other nations, and the other nation becomes a vassal state. It doesn't mean that you go and you destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Nations have conquered other nations, and it doesn't mean that you take the capital city and raise it and destroy it to the ground. One of the rare instances in history, and I'm afraid to say, yes, it's an ugly equation, Berlin was most probably raised to the ground. Certainly the Russians, they knew how to do a job. In the section they came into, the end of the Second World War, they pounded the Kishkas out of Berlin. And Yerushalayim didn't hit the record book. I'm not going to ask you to show the movie, Is Paris Burning? Hitler had planned to destroy Paris. Le Tour d'Eiffel. right? The Louvre, all of the beauty, the art, the architecture, the majesty of France. And I mean, I don't remember the details of the story about the German general who had been given those orders, and they knew already the Allies are making their way into Paris. Now, the question was asked, is Paris burning? And they had put dynamite all over the city, just destroying the culture and beauty of Paris. And the German general who was in charge of it at the last moment, he couldn't do it. He didn't want to go down in history as the barbarian who had destroyed the art treasures of the world, great architecture of the world. You don't do such things. You don't destroy a capital city to the ground. And if a country is conquered by another country, does it mean that the inhabitants are exiled? No. It's possible for country A to conquer country B, and it has happened thousands of times in history. And the temples remain in place, and the capital city remains in place. The citizens remain in place. But what happened over here was, not only did they lose their independence, but here there were acts of such extreme ugliness and cruelty. Don't destroy the base of Israel. You don't destroy temples. You don't take a capital city and raise it to the ground. You don't take the population and send them off into exile. What the Gemara is doing, all of these separate sources, each one is the reason for something else. When the Gemara in the Sefer Shabbos lists eight reasons of Lo Chorba Yerushalayim Ela, the Gemara in the Sefer Shabbos is saying Yerushalayim was destroyed because of the Gemara. Is not talking there about why the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, why Jews lost their independence, why Jews were exiled. The Gemara in Shabbos isn't dealing with that. The Gemara in Shabbos is dealing with the unique and special tragedy of a capital city being destroyed utterly. Aru, aru, ad hayisodba. Destroy it out of so therefore there were eight opinions in Gemara. What was it? What were the reasons why Yerushalayim was destroyed? The Gemara there is not talking about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara there is not talking about the exile. The Gemara there is not talking about the loss of independence. So why was Yerushalayim destroyed? Yes, because they shamed Talmidei Chacham, because there was still Shabbos in the streets of Yerushalayim. Because there were no longer people you could trust, because children were not learning Torah, because people didn't admonish one another. All of the reasons, because people demanded din. People weren't ready in their relationship with fellow men to go beyond the requirements. Yeah, you can do something sometimes, let me should have been. Yeah, right. So you're sort of giving in to the other person. Big deal. All of those reasons were one particular aspect of the total picture of Korban, and that was, why was the city of Yerushalayim destroyed? Why was the Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Sinat Kinah. Sinat Kinah. Why did we lose our independence altogether? And why were Jews exiled? Oh, there you know why? Says the Rambam. Because if you're to maintain your independence, you have to be ready to fight for it. And you have to know how to fight for it. You can't be an amateur. Jews should have taught themselves how to fight. They should have raised the standing army. The Rambam is not merely a military commentator. He's not disagreeing with all of the Gemaras. But he's talking about one aspect.
And that aspect is the loss of independence. He's not talking about Churban HaBayit. Churban HaBayit, the Gemara said, was because of Sinat Kinam. He's not talking about why Yerushalayim was razed to the ground. Why did we lose? Why did we lose the struggle? Why did we lose our independence? Why did we become a conquered people? As the Rambam says, quite understandably, we didn't prepare ourselves for battle. The Ramban says, it was our own fault. We invited the enemy into Eretz Yisrael. We entered into all sorts of agreements and we invited them into the country. I don't know if we gave them weapons at the time. Maybe Rome didn't need our weapons, but we invited the enemy into our heartland. So we brought the destruction upon ourselves. So says the Ramban. Yes, Sir Rabbi Yochanan says, you know why we lost in the struggle against Rome? Because we weren't able to make proper choices and decisions at the crucial moments at which those decisions had to be taken. And Rish Lakish obviously echoes the words of so many others when he says, we lost the battle before a shot was fired. Because if at the time of Churban HaBayit, at the time of the peak period of Jewish population in Eretz Yisrael, there were 1.5 to 2 million Jews over here, and 1.5 to 2 million Jews were able to stand up against the Roman Empire until they were crushed. What happens if there would have been 4 million Jews? What happens if there would have been 5 million Jews? That's what Rish Lakish is saying. If Jews would have started coming on Aliyah in the days of Ezra, so by the time Rome and others came in, there would have been 5-6 million Jews, a force that Rome could never have destroyed. I've often quoted the Roman historian who said that when Judea rebels, the entire Roman Empire quakes. Judea was the smallest province in the Roman Empire. But they had more tzaddis from Judea than they had from any one of the other countries in their empire. The one that was frightened of more than anything else. And that was only where there was a small number of Jews. What happens, Rish Lakish says, what happens if we would have had another 2-3 million Jews over a period of 700 years? Do you know what it would have meant if more Jews came in the days of Ezra? By the time Rome was ready to come into Eretz Yisrael, I mean, they weren't having one or two children in those days with a dog and a cat. From the time of Ezra until the time of Rome, I don't know how many millions of Jews there would have been over here. So Rish Lakish says, we lost the battle from day one. And Rabbi Yochanan says, we lost our independence because we didn't have people who were ready to make decisions and take the responsibility for making decisions. So therefore, all of the various opinions that we have learned are not at loggerheads with one another. The whole Churban represented a great deal more than the conquest of Eretz Yisrael. It was different than any other conquest of one nation by another, because it included destroying the great center the spiritual center of the world, for that matter. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Unparalleled. What do you know, unparalleled? This is not done. People don't do this. Don't do this to other people. And the Germans, I think, tried to... Coventry? That was when they did destroy... But people in war, try to avoid temples or great structures, except for shuls. Shuls always destroyed. Why did that happen? So that's another aspect of Churban. And then, of course, the fact that Yerushalayim is razed to the ground. So all of the various opinions, each one is talking about a different aspect of the totality of that which was the Churban. The only thing I didn't find in all of the literature that I have studied up until now is the zealots. Nobody blamed it on the zealots. They blamed it on poor leadership. They blamed it on leadership that couldn't make decisions, leadership that brought the enemy into Eretz Yisrael, leadership that didn't really make certain that the army was up to snuff and up to par, leadership that was unconcerned about Aliyah and maybe didn't really want that much Aliyah, you know. I don't know. These may have been the problems. But it wasn't the zealots. It means, of course, it was a whole marechet, a complete... all of the various reasons, each one deals with a different aspect. I wanted to stop right here. Most probably I should stop right here. Are we in... how would we assess our situation right now? I mean, it's Shavuos of the Talmud. How do we assess, how would I assess our situation right now? Number one, of course, the most important thing is that after all is said and done, there are more Jews living in Eretz Yisrael today, twice, nearly three times as many Jews living in Eretz Yisrael today as during the peak period of Jewish population, during the period of the Second Kambo, the period of the Second Beit HaMikdash. Army can use a little bit of upgrading. Have we brought enemy into the country? Well, you judge that for yourself. What's the story with Aliyah? I don't know. All right. But despite all of that, maybe it's always worthwhile to say the great story of Rav Herzog, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, which is Rav Herzog was in the United States in 1942 as he was on a visit to the United States, and he was the chief rabbi at the time, and Rommel's forces were moving swiftly all across North Africa, and they were already banging on the doors of Egypt, and it really meant that they were just a few days march from Eretz Yisrael, and they stopped to regroup at a place called El Alamein, and Rav Herzog was in the United States. He says he must go back, he must be with his people in Eretz Yisrael. Then of course the plans were that they assumed that Hitler, Rommel would break through at El Alamein, and then it meant that Eretz Yisrael was going to fall. In fact, the British had already planned falling back into Mesopotamia. They were going to leave Eretz Yisrael completely open to Hitler, and we discussed this some months ago or about a year ago. Not only that, they were going to make sure if Hitler breaks through, they would not issue petrol for any of the cars owned by Jews in Eretz Yisrael. I think there were about 1,400 or 1,500 automobiles that were owned by Jews, because they were afraid that if Jewish cars owned by Jews would have petrol, they blocked the roads, and the heroic British had to fall back with great dignity beyond the Euphrates. So they asked Rav Herzog, but how can you go back now? Boats were being sunk day in and day out, the U-boat attacks. He was supposed to leave one particular morning on a boat, because he insisted and got special permission from Roosevelt, and they got it onto a boat, and then in the morning somebody comes and tells him that the boat left, and he was very, very upset. 2 days later, of course, the headlines in the paper were that boat was sunk. He got onto another boat and then began a great odyssey of his travel all the way down by boat through the Atlantic to South Africa, and from South Africa all the way through Africa by everything, most probably from elephant to small plane, big plane, train,
until he finally made it back to Eretz Yisrael. But they asked him, how can you go back to Eretz Yisrael at a time like this? So he says in the Nevi'im, that really was the beginning of the Shia, in the Nevi'im, in the prophecies of the Nevi'im, there is a prophecy of a first Churban, first destruction, and a second destruction. There is no prophecy of a third destruction. Eretz Yisrael will never be destroyed again. Little was he to know, of course, that Hitler, Yimach Shemay, had gone as far as he would go. Ultimately, the fact is that the fall of Hitler began at the gates of Eretz Yisrael. At El Alamein began the sweep back. That was the first... I think it was Winston Churchill who said, until El Alamein, the Allies never won a battle. From El Alamein, we never lost a battle. Hitler was destroyed, really, at the gates of Eretz Yisrael. There wouldn't be a third Churban. A lot of other things that we talked about today sound like nothing has changed in 2,000 years. Things have changed. Anyway, this is the introduction to Eicha. So I think next week, which unfortunately it's going to be our last class, we're ending about a week earlier this year than we usually do. A lot of things going on. So we will learn Eicha and Mi'etz Hashem next week. And then, of course, we're going to start again 2.5 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. I'll give the exact dates. We're going to have our intensive program before Rosh Hashanah. Some color, everybody. Okay.